Coming up on today's show.
It's always telling you where you're going to go next and what the mission is. And I think sometimes what gets lost in that is, why am I doing this and who am I? And if this is what I do, it's not who I am.
Peace be with you. This is Catholic Sports Radio, located at the intersection of your faith life and sports life, and on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and lots of other platforms. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking with Catholic guests who are current or former athletes, coaches, referees, umpires, clergy, administrators, and more from the pro, amateur, and scholastic ranks about the intersection of their faith life and their sports life. What do you think, folks? Should I start inviting you to contribute towards a listener mail segment on the show where I'll read emails or social media private messages sent in to me? Give it some thought. I would love to hear your feedback, both on that idea and always on the show itself in general. The show website is catholicsportsradio.net. At the top of the website, you can link over to social media for this show, meaning Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, so you can engage with me and the show that way. Maybe I will pose that listener mail question to the Catholic Sports Radio community, meaning the Facebook group, which consists of listeners of this show and some past guests. That is free to join, and you can also find a link for that, too, on catholicsportsradio.net. Anyhow, in terms of getting in touch, social media, as well as the website, all give you the opportunity to contact me, as does traditional email, which you can do through bruce@catholicsportsradio.net. Now on to my ministry moment for this episode. There are a lot of secrets in the world of sports, and at least as far as these that I'm going to cite, are generally treated as such for good reason. In other words, there's an element of trust. These are not meant to be deceitful. A general manager confiding in a key member or two of the front office about a trade he is making. A coach in football covering his lips when calling in a play so as to protect the integrity of the game by preventing the other team from cheating through lip reading. The same action being done in baseball through signs from the manager that only his players know and understand. A scouting staff who is together at their league's draft, staying tight-lipped at their table with regards to who they are going to select. In our faith life, we too are convicted, knowing that what we hold in our hearts and in our minds is our commitment, our dedication to the Lord. In the New Testament, we read in 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 11, about Paul's suffering under persecution being due to his work as a preacher, apostle, and teacher. Paul said he was not ashamed to suffer because he trusted Christ to be the ultimate foundation, not his own efforts. We go on to read in verse 12, and this is from the New International Version, by the way, quote, "I know whom I have believed, and am convinced that he is able to guard what I have entrusted to him for that day." Moving on now with this week's episode, my guest was chosen by the New York Jets in the sixth round of the 2003 NFL Draft and spent time with four different organizations between then and 2009 to also include the Minnesota Vikings, Dallas Cowboys, and Detroit Lions. He went on to play for the United Football League's Florida Tuskers, leading them to a perfect regular season one-loss record and to the championship game, and was named season MVP and came back to start for the Tuskers the next season. He went on to two high school football coaching jobs and was the quarterback's coach at the University of Pittsburgh. Back in his days as a student athlete, he was a four-year starting quarterback on a football scholarship to the University of Wisconsin, and in 2017, he was inducted into the University of Wisconsin Athletic Hall of Fame. Welcome to Catholic Sports Radio, Brooks Bollinger.
Hey, Bruce. Thanks for having me today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm looking forward to this. I just read off football stops in New York, Minnesota, Dallas, Detroit, and Florida, yet none of those are where you were born and raised. Tell the audience where that was, as well as what the family size was.
Yeah, I was born in Bismarck, North Dakota, soon after. Ended up being raised mostly in Grand Forks, North Dakota. And I was the oldest of four. I had two sisters and then a younger brother.
Okay, and I believe, I believe you are a cradle Catholic, but set the record straight on that. And then tell us, too, about your Catholic education growing up.
Yeah, so I was born Catholic, baptized, and then I attended St. Michael's Catholic School, where my mom was a first and second grade teacher. So that was K through six. And unfortunately, in Grand Forks, we didn't have a Catholic high school option at the time that worked for me. So I went to public school then from middle school and high school.
Interesting. What I did not mention in the intro was that not only did you start every game at quarterback during your four-year high school career, but you not only played 3 years of high school basketball as well, but even played baseball well enough to be drafted by the Los Angeles Dodgers twice. So I guess there was no question for young Brooks Bollinger that you were going to make it as a pro athlete.
I don't know about that. It was, you know, growing up in Grand Forks, and my dad was the offensive coordinator at the University of North Dakota. So I got to grow up with a really cool childhood in athletics, and I always knew I'd be a college player. I tell my kids the first NFL game I ever went to, I was wearing a uniform.
Wow.
So it seemed far away, and it wasn't really something. I mean, I always dreamed of just playing forever, like a lot of little kids do. But you know, I would say that in my mind, it was kind of college was the main kind of dream that I had. And you know, I also ran track, so I grew up in that era where you know, you just went to the next thing. You got to be with your friends and have a lot of cool experiences in sports. So it wasn't as much about where I was going as where I was at.
Was any of it prayerful, or was it just boyhood dreams? Meaning, did you actually pray, like, Lord, I would love to be a pro athlete. Please help me find a path to the NFL or to MLB or any of that?
I don't think I saw it that way at the time. I mean, I would say I grew up being Catholic because I was born Catholic, and I certainly, being the firstborn, wanted to do the right thing and you know, enjoyed kind of learning about the faith and doing all the right things. But I think it wasn't until years later that I mean, I'm still on quite the journey, as we all are, but in my mind, I would say at that age, it was a lot of my life was, you know, churches in church. And then I certainly prayed and was connected, but I would say I prayed more, probably to help me be a good teammate, and help me play well enough to help my teammates be successful and for us to be successful. I don't know that I mapped it out much further than that.
When you went off to the University of Wisconsin, were you kind of big man on campus, or did you carry your Catholic faith with you and not get caught up in being the star quarterback? Meaning, perhaps your values helped guide you through the college years?
Yeah. So, you know, my college experience, I'd say I showed up some kid from North Dakota. I was not, you know, super highly recruited. It wasn't, who's this big star coming to campus. But that quickly changed, my redshirt freshman year. When I took over as a starter, my first start was at Ohio State. We won 42-17. We won 9 straight games, including the Rose Bowl. Mm. And there was a moment in time where I always say it felt like I got pulled outside of my body, and I was watching this other guy be the star quarterback, because that wasn't the kid from North Dakota. But, you know, I would say that was a very challenging time for me. I certainly, my faith, I knew it was important to me. I knew what my values were. I think my values did help guide me, but to say that it was a straight line, I would be lying to you. It was definitely a challenge, and took me some time, really through my pro career, and then beyond, to really connect to my faith and be more guided by it, I would say, than just having it be a part of my life. So, yeah, I would say I went down some fairly dark side roads through my college career, but was also really lucky. We had a team priest in Madison, Monsignor Mike Burke, who's an amazing man that was kind of the rock for me and help kind of guide me through that and get to the other side.
When you got drafted by the Jets, clearly that was a high point, but were you prepared at that age for what was ahead in terms of life in New York, life as an NFL quarterback, keeping your faith as a priority? That has to be a huge, huge deer in the headlights moment for a rookie coming in, regardless of how good they were in college.
Yeah, and I think sports sometimes can mask a lot of things. You know what? Jimmy Johnson with the Dallas Cowboys saying, "Just win, baby." And, you know, I think that everything, you know, kind of can get covered up when you're winning and when things are going well and when you're having success. And I think as athletes, especially when you have early success and you're not quite sure why you had that success and you haven't had the time to really build the foundation and be intentional to create the success, it just kind of happens and then you get drug along by it. I think that's what kind of happened to me in my college career. You know, I was a two-time captain and I think I had enough of a foundation that I had built that I could carry through. But really, if I'm honest, you know, my development got a little stagnant and it kind of became a, you know, just, you know, make sure you're pleasing these people by winning, make sure you're pleasing your teammates in this way. You know, I think my leadership was more by probably keeping everybody else happy than it was about really knowing who I was and how I needed to show up in the world. So, you know, I think that created some gaps and certainly some learning over time. But yeah, they say, you know, you live life forward and you learn it backwards. So I'm grateful for my playing career as much as anything else. I mean, number one, the relationships that you kind of get to build in that environment. But then secondly is the failures. You know, you get to fail publicly and it challenges you in a lot of ways. And I got to do that in spades. So, you know, of all the successes you rattled off, Bruce, you know, there was a ton of failures and, you know, they hurt at the time, but as I look back, I think those are the things that have helped shape who I am today as much as anything.
Fantastic. Folks, at the very start of this episode, I was sincere when I asked you if we should start a listener mail segment. So do let me know because I really value your feedback on the show. In fact, since this is a ministry for me and I don't get any income from doing this, nor do I have any sponsors, anyone who makes a financial gift to Catholic Sports Radio is by extension giving me their feedback. To me, that's an indication that you like this show, you enjoy the work that I'm doing, and hopefully it's an indication that this show is helping you in your faith life. That is a big goal for me in doing this week after week, month after month, for more than 4.5 years now. I truly aim to move more people closer to Christ, whether that means going back to church after having fallen away, or whether it means getting dialed into the Mass instead of just going on Sunday for the sake of being able to say that you went, or if it means already being on fire for the Lord and immersing yourself even further into your faith. If it takes hearing Catholic Sports Radio to accomplish any of that, then I say thank you, God, for using me in this show as the vehicle to touch the hearts of our brothers and sisters in Christ. As for supporting me, yes, I ask that you prayerfully consider making this ministry a part of your tithing. You have heard on lots of episodes me mentioning names of past guests and listeners who have made a contribution, and you've heard me detail specific costs that I'm challenged to otherwise have to somehow cover out of my own pocket. It's as easy as going to the show website, catholicsportsradio.net, and then utilizing the blue Donate to CSR button that you'll see there. It's fast, it's easy, it's secure, and perhaps best of all is that you get to type in whatever amount you're comfortable giving. By that I mean there's not already a predetermined list of amounts to choose from. No amount is too small and no amount is too big. For those that are a little hesitant about putting credit card information online, you can instead contact me for information on sending a check through the mail. Get in touch via social media or email me through bruce@catholicsportsradio.net, and I will write you back with the relevant details. I'm grateful for your considering Catholic Sports Radio as part of your tithing as I continue working to move more people closer to Christ. Brooks, you mentioned a priest when you were at the University of Wisconsin. Did you have a spiritual director throughout your journey through pro football? Because I'm thinking of things like changing teams or the injuries you sustained in the UFL playing in Orlando and eventually retiring. It would seem to me as though a compassionate, steadying hand to help guide you would be so, so valuable.
How I would say it worked out for me was kind of a mishmash of people, and you know, based on the different stops that I had, whether that be teammates or priests that were involved with the team or outside the team, I think that was probably how it all worked out. I think looking back, again, it all kind of goes fast and it all becomes a little relative. So I think if I could go back and do it again, I would have been a lot more thoughtful and intentional of kind of mapping that out and guiding me down a path. I think it was a little bit ad hoc, and I'm very grateful for, you know, some of the people that came into my life. But, you know, I think one of the risks when you're in that position, especially is, let's say you go to a new team and you're the quarterback or you're a quarterback, you kind of want to show that you have things figured out, right? Or act like you have things figured out. And I think that, you know, I probably, it's funny you think back to, you'd go and speak to kids or do radio shows like this, right? And I probably spent more time talking about what I should be doing and what they should be doing than what I actually did. So I would say that, you know, again, I'm grateful for it, but it was probably disjointed and ad hoc the way that I didn't really tie it. And I think that led to a lot of kind of fits and starts in my life and kind of my faith.
Yeah. And you kind of made a similar point before that I'm hearing again, which is you slip into where you're working more on making sure you're developing as a quarterback, developing as an athlete, instead of spending equal time developing your own personal infrastructure.
Yeah. I think there's so many great things that sports teach us. And it's such a great environment to learn and about yourself and how you react under pressure and how you react in these moments and how you build trust with people and there's how to be selfless, and there's all these great things that you pull up. I think one of the risks, and I think we're seeing it more and more in sports today as it becomes more structured and more, even I look at my kids now and their path and how overdeveloped it is at a young age is you kind of get pulled along rather than really thinking about what does this mean to me? How does it support my greater purpose? And how do I want to be intentional to position myself, you know, where I want to be in now and in the future? I think a lot of times now kids end up getting pulled, and you see this a lot with young athletes. You know, they get pulled into the soccer club at a young age and they're promising and they go all in, and that becomes their identity and their life, and they're getting told where to go and what to be and who to train with and what to eat and how to develop and which team they're going to make next. And then all of a sudden they're 17 years old and it's over and they're lost.
Wow.
Right. Because they're kind of getting led the wrong way. And I think to a certain extent, that's what happened to me, right? Is you sign that letter of intent to go to Wisconsin. The objective is clear. You need to be this for this team. And, you know, you're a high achiever and you want to do that to the best of your ability. And then all of a sudden you go to the NFL and then you go to the next team. And it's always telling you where you're going to go next and what the mission is. And I think sometimes what gets lost in that is, why am I doing this and who am I? And this is what I do. It's not who I am. But meanwhile, as it's easy to say, but when you're on the inside looking out, that is how the whole world is defining you. And there's more voices and there's more avenues now to hear that as an athlete, even for young athletes. And And I think that's why you almost have to be more intentional and thoughtful. I think the good is still in sports, but we have to be more intentional. It doesn't inherently accomplish the things it used to. It can drive some problematic development as well.
Yeah, and you've made a lot of wonderful points. There's one in particular I want to go back to, and I'm really glad that you brought it up, which is I could finish talking to you, Brooks, today and then tell someone that you and I did this interview, and they would probably say, oh, the former NFL quarterback, yeah. And or they might say, what does he do now? In other words, everyone gets so caught up in defining people's identity by what they do.
Yeah, in really a lot of different ways. And then, you know, I mean, I was in the era, thankfully, before kind of social media. But there was like email and chat rooms. And I remember, you know, we hit a rough patch and I was sitting with my roommates on a Saturday or a Sunday morning or something. I opened up my email or this chat room. Somebody sent me an email and said, dear Mr. Ball and Sock, please stop sucking so bad so that me and my friend come back to the games, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, there's countless stories of, you know, my parents had no kind of interactions, or my siblings, or, you know, my grandmother at a game. When you're the quarterback, like, that's part of the deal, you know? And so I got to kind of live that. Well, now kids are living that in all different areas, right? Because they have this social media, they have all this access, they're defined by the image that they portray, whatever that might be. It might be sports, you know, it might be whatever, however they're defining themselves becomes kind of similar to that. And I think that's a big problem we're facing today is now once you get on that path, now it can be a dark place.
Yeah.
Right. And if you don't have the foundation underneath it to put that into perspective, it is very difficult. You know, it's easy for me to sit out here, you know, even now with these kids that are playing and just be like, you know, don't worry about it. You know, it's not who you are. It's what you do. It's fine. Well, that's all well and good, but when you're in the middle of it, it goes against kind of the way you're wired. So it's interesting, you know, as we look around, it coincides with I think diminishing faith amongst our population, and then being attacked in so many different ways that without the foundation to fall back onto, I think it's certainly a tough time to be an athlete, and I think it's a tough time to be a kid too.
Yeah, and audience, as you're hearing from Brooks, there is an opportunity here to lead by example. Brooks is doing it with his own children. He's done it as a coach, and that is that you don't meet someone for the first time and the first question you ask him is, so what do you do? Because now you are identifying that person simply by what their title is. So kids are going to watch you, whether it's your student athletes or whether it's your own children. And so you want to get to know people on a personal level and get to know who they are, what's in their heart. So lead by example, as Brooks is describing here. I also want you to learn a lesson, audience, from Brooks in the following. Brooks, Hill Murray, a Catholic school just north of St. Paul, Minnesota, sees that you retired and calls you to offer you a coaching job. And at the end of the first year, they want you to stay, but the University of Pittsburgh calls. And that was tough on your wife. Explain to the audience what I'm referring to and how you were able to find peace eventually in a very trying situation.
Yeah, well, I married the right person. You know, yes.
I love that answer. I love that answer.
Hill Murray, you know, saw the article in the paper and local St. Paul guy, and I'm not from here, but I married into it. My wife is from St. Paul, and through my playing career, I developed some good relationships, obviously, with my stint with the Vikings and then my wife's background. So, Charlie Walters is a local columnist in St. Paul Pioneer Press. He wrote a little blurb that I was stepping down. Let's be honest, nobody wanted me to play for him anymore. That's why I retired. He called me. I knew nothing about Hill Murray. I grew up a coach's son and a teacher's son, and you know, I knew that there's a good chance that I would go into that, but I hadn't spent a lot of time really figuring out it. And to be honest, it was probably, you know, half kind of lack of planning and half being a little arrogant of you know, I think I have a good background and I have a pretty good skill set that I think can apply. And sure, I can figure that out, right? And so Bill calls me up. I'm like, what the heck? This seems like a cool place. I knew nothing about Hill. I took the job as my first coaching job. And I'll go off on a little tangent here, Bruce. I hope it's okay. But, uh-huh. but I think it was a big learning for me. It was funny. I remember being out there the first day. I'm so excited. And we got our staff and we got the kids first day of practice. And, you know, got great energy and blowing the whistle. They're going through the stretch lines, go through a couple sessions of practice. And I blow the whistle. I'm like, all right, boys, grab some water. And they take a couple steps and they turn around and they're like, Coach, where's the water? And I'm like, who's supposed to, dang it, who's supposed to get, oh yeah, that's my job, right? It was a great lesson in kind of leadership and what I learned through that experience.
And humility.
Yeah, get the water, man. And then on top of it, I was really lucky. I grew up in the Norman Rock, what I call the Norman Rock College football. My dad and his staff, they coached to use football as a vehicle to shape young men, right? And in my mind, that's the only reason anybody coached. Mm. Of course, it was a different – coaches didn't make the money they make today. There wasn't the money in sports. It was a different animal. But I never coached to show how smart I was. I didn't coach to show that I could out-scheme other people. I coached to use that as a vehicle to shape young men's lives. And I told them at Hill Murray, I told my Creighton Drum Hall later, I said – I'm the shiny red bike at the front of the store, all right? I bring them in. I help them down this path. Mm. The real gift they're getting, right, is in the school and education and the faith development. I'm just the shiny red bike to get them in and guide them along that path. But what I learned, and the water's a good example, is that even though that was so important to me and that was my purpose, it was challenged so often. Because you have to get the water and you have to get the buses there on time and you got to make sure you deal with the parents properly and you got to raise money with the booster club and you got to have the uniforms there and you got to, I remember being in Hill Murray washing all the uniforms at 2:30 a.m. after, you know, the game and you're doing all that stuff and you do it because you love the kids. But then I'm like, man, a lot of my energy is going away from that which is most important, which is making the impact. It's so easy to get distracted and what's immediate and what has to get solved right now. So that, anyways, I kind of tell that long story. I think that shows up in a lot of our lives, right? I know I want what's important to my family and being a father and that relationship, but you know, they got to get to soccer on time and they got to make sure they have this, that, and the other for school. And we got to get college applications. You know, it's just, it gets busy and it gets full and you need so much of a strong foundation support, I think, to keep that lens shaped properly. But that's one of those stories that I think illustrates it. So I just wanted to share that.
Yeah. Thank you. University of Pittsburgh called you. You left Hill Murray.
So Paul Chris is a good friend. You know, I had been at Wisconsin with him and we had kind of kept in touch and he got the Pitt job and he called me up and Hill had hired me then to raise money in the development office and be the head football coach and kind of keep me there. And to a certain extent, I was clear, you know, I'm a St. Paul woman and got your family in St. Paul, and here's your path. And I just knew, I felt in many ways deep down that I had a skill set and I always wanted to be a college coach or an NFL coach. And probably before I even wanted to be a player, you know, I was around those guys. I was on the Grease Board. I was in the meetings in the equipment room as a young kid. I mean, I just got to spend so much time with them. And so I was like, I'm going to be a coach like my dad, you know? And so I, you know, my wife's looking at me with tears rolling down her cheeks. Mm. And I got the phone in my hand telling Paul that we'll take the job.
Wow.
And we moved out to Pittsburgh with our three kids. She went from being a player's wife, which is, it's pretty good, right? Like football, you're home a lot and you have a good schedule and you're obviously making good money and your off seasons are off for the most part. And, and we're in a place where we had a bunch of family around us. And so we went from that life to college coach's wife, where you're basically a single parent and you're in a new place and you don't know anybody. Mm. And in that first year, I mean, her mom had some health issues. She lost a friend. We lost a baby in pregnancy. And it was just difficult. Wow. It was hard. And then the second year, we kind of settled in and really loved Pittsburgh. It's a great community. And kind of understand the rhythms of it. And I had, I kind of felt like I was in the fast track. I was in the quarterback room. I was calling a bunch of the plays for Paul. I was probably on a path to become a coordinator in college football, which is the track you want to be on to be a head coach. Mm. So I felt good about all that, but I never saw my kids. And my oldest was 8 at the time, and we played Miami in the last game of the regular season on Saturday. Sunday morning, I got on a flight, and I had 12 flights in 14 days recruiting the day the season ended. So, and in season, I would probably see my kids, you know, a little bit on Thursday evenings, take them to school Friday mornings, and then I probably wouldn't really see them much until the next Thursday. Mm. I mean, we don't get into how that exists or why that exists. It's just that's football coaching a little bit. So I got back from those, and we had kept our house back here for at least those first 2 years just to kind of keep the Band-Aid on a little bit, and Natalie would come back for a month here and there when the kids were off school, et cetera. And, you know, we're trying to figure out. But so we're back in Minnesota. I got back from that trip. We had a couple of days off before I went back to Pittsburgh, and I looked at her and I said, I'm done. She said, just like blindsided. You know, she's like, what are you talking about? You're done. I said, listen, I'm looking at Miles, he's 8 years old. I can't, I know if I've seen this movie before, I grew up around it. If I go another year, it's going to be 25 or 30 years later in the blink of an eye.
Wow.
It'd be great. I'm good at it. Can make a good living, but we're going to move to 6 or 8 more cities. And I'm just really, I can't go 10 years later and not know my son. I told her, and it was, you know, Saturday, and I called the principal at the Catholic school, and I said, do you have room in second grade and kindergarten? And she said, we do. I said, can they start Monday? She said, they can. Mm. And I said, boys, get your old uniforms out because you're starting back here on Monday. And I went back and kind of finished recruiting and loaded up a U-Haul a couple months later and drove it back from Pittsburgh and tried to figure out what the heck I was going to do with the rest of my life.
Wow. Bravo. Bravo. What a great story. What a great story. And then there you go, folks. That's another one. But I was going to say, there's a great example from Brooks right there. He's given you a few gems already. Brooks, tell us about a yearly retreat that you do with Matt Burke. Folks, you know him if you followed the NFL long enough. He played for the Vikings for 10 years. He played for the Ravens for, I think, 3 seasons. Brooks, tell us about the retreat that you do with Matt and also the fact that you have done Exodus 90.
So that's how it started. Matt's, we played together, and over the years has become a really, really good friend. And somebody I look up to a lot. When I was kind of going through all this, I'm like, all right, I'm going to figure out the real world and I'm going to change the world. And, you know, here we go. I don't know what it's going to be. I have no idea. I'm going to meet with everybody under the sun and figure it out. I reconnected with Matt, and his neighbor at the time was Rich Chapman. And they were doing a book called All Pro Wisdom, and really trying to, what I talked about earlier is incorporate faith into football. And subsequently they had created an app that coaches could use. So anyways, that pulled me into conversation with Matt and Rich. And Rich had been a mentor to Matt on his journey, just a phenomenal guy. And really that was probably the time that, and this was eating at me at Pitt a little bit. And then I was becoming more and more connected to my faith and living more by my faith at that time. But that was the time I was really like, okay, I'm kind of starting from scratch. Like what do I need to do? So, you know, we got connected and that really started a friendship with Rich and grew the friendship with Matt and I. And I don't know how long after that, Matt sent a text out to, I don't know, 12 or 15 people and said, hey, I feel like I need something right now. I'm going to do this Exodus 90. Who's in? And there was like, I didn't even look at the thing. I just said, I'm in. Like, I'm hungry for whatever you're doing. And, and you know, I'd love to challenge myself. And so we did it. And that group became close through it. And it was a, I think, a transformational experience for all of us. And then at the end of that year, Matt hosted a retreat up at his cabin in Wisconsin and brought a priest in and spent a couple nights and really dug in and just format has kind of shifted over time, but just spending some time with some amazing and thoughtful people and just stepping away and really focusing. So it's become an annual event, and that group continues to stay connected. And it's been a special thing for all of us to build those relationships and work towards deepening our faith.
Fantastic. Let's close, Brooks. I asked you earlier about the trying time that you and Natalie had that you described for us. Let's bring your wife back into the conversation as we get ready to wrap up here. How long have the two of you been in the sacrament of holy matrimony? And you've kind of talked around them, but share with us about the family that the two of you have made.
So we're married in 2005 when I was playing for the Jets. And our oldest son was born in New York. About a year and a half after we got married, and that's Miles. So fast forward to today, Miles is a senior in high school, 17 years old. And then, you know, it just kind of had one show up every two or three years after that. And then Bo's a sophomore. They're both at Creighton Durham Hall in St. Paul. We got the section final tonight. They're both playing football, which is fun. And then we have two daughters in the middle. Liviana is 12, and Isla's 9. And then we got little Ike. Isaac is a kindergartner. And, so the younger three go to St. Joe's, in West St. Paul. And actually it's funny, some of the gifts we've gotten through this time back since we've moved back here is one of them is my parents moved down and I got to coach with my dad for a while, and he's still at Creighton Hall, and now he's helping coach my sons. And then my mom, after being retired for, 13 or 14 years from teaching, she went back to St. Joe's, and, you know, now she's helping out with Ike in kindergarten. So that's been a really special part of our story, I think, is to have not only my family be a part of it, but now his family's here. And I tell you, I don't know, Bruce, if you have children or not, but I don't think we could do it without them. When you have five villages, takes a village is very true. So we're grateful for that. And, you know, we have a loud house right now. There's a lot of action with that. But it's we're having an absolute blast, and we're really lucky to have some great kids.
That's awesome. And I can hear the sincerity, I can hear the fatherly love in your voice, and it makes me all the more appreciative that you were able to make time to talk to me today for Catholic Sports Radio. Brooks, God bless you and your sweet family. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Bruce. God bless you as well.
And folks, as a nod certainly to all the years that Brooks spent playing sports, we're going to say football in particular. You heard about all the others that he did, football, baseball, and even track. It's fitting that we close this week's show with an athlete's prayer, and let's pray it together in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Help me to play the game, dear Lord, with all my might and main. Grant me the courage born of right, a heart to stand the strain. Send me a sense of humor, Lord, to laugh when victory is mine, to laugh if I should meet defeat without a fret or whine. Give me the grace to follow rules, to fess up when I'm wrong, when silence or some other thing wins plaudits from the throng. When foes are tough and fighting fierce and I am getting weak, dear God, don't ever let me show a broad, bright yellow streak. and teach me, Lord, life's game to play just one day at a time. With thee as coach and trainer, Lord, real victory must be mine. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen. Thanks so much for listening. This is Catholic Sports Radio. Find more at catholicsportsradio.net, as well as on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. It is at Cath Sports Radio on all those, C-A-T-H, at Cath Sports Radio. I'm Bruce Wozniak, and remember, it's not whether you win or lose, it's that it's Jesus that you always choose.